This morning we take a look at the practice of Unitarian Universalist worship itself. When we gather on Sunday mornings, why do we do what we do? The words of David C. Pohl offer us a reminder of the purpose of worship. He says, "We come to this time and place to rediscover the wondrous gifts of free religious community, to renew our faith in the holiness, goodness, and beauty of life, to reaffirm the way of open minds and full hearts, to rekindle the flame of memory and hope, to reclaim the vision of an earth made fair, with all her people one." As we begin our time of worship, let us experience with new eyes and ears this ancient practice of coming together. I now invite Jim and Gwen Fike to light the chalice this morning in honor of their support for UUCF's planned giving program. Whether given as a present-day gift or part of estate planning, the planned giving and endowment fund is a way to make a gift to the UUCF that will ensure money that may be needed sometime in the future. We thank Jim and Gwen Fike for ensuring UUCF's future with their generosity. I now invite you to join me with saying the words on the screen. This flame affirms the light of truth, the warmth of community, and the fire of commitment. Love is the doctrine that we share. The quest of truth is our sacrament, and service is our prayer. To dwell together in peace, to see knowledge and freedom, to serve human need, that's who we covenant with one another.
It's that time of year where we are moving into summer, and we're seeing changes in the transition from one leader to another, and so we wanted to take a moment to recognize those folks who have been on the board this past year, and some of them longer, who are leaving. And we actually have five people that I'd like to call up front this morning, and I invite you to just stay up here for a minute so we can make a fuss over you. Mike Mendelson, Barbara Nelson, Lauren Caddick, Jim Cruz, and Sherlyn Neblett. Just right up front where everybody can see you. And what I want to say is that being part of a faith community is something where, as we've talked about so many times, we all give of our time, talent, and treasure. And the folks who step into these leadership positions on the board, well, sometimes they end up giving more than they know they will along the way. It can be a challenge, and it can also be a great joy. And I want to thank you for the hours and hours that you have put in to help make sure that this congregation is strong and healthy and on the right track. And it has truly been a pleasure to work with you over this period of time. And I also have to say we've had an amazing board president in Sherlyn, and so we have a certificate of appreciation here. And again, we thank you very much for your service to UUCF. It is because of your vision that we are able to do what we do. And that's right, most importantly, there will be cake. There's a beautiful cake here. Thank you. You can sit down. Thank you. Thank you. I have one other very important thank you this morning. And if Janice, if you will come forward, and she's looking at me, grimacing a little bit. So I'll make this short and sweet, but I want to say that when I first got here to UUCF, Donette, who was in charge of our website, told me, "The website's broken, we need a new website, can you figure out how we're going to get a new website?" And I said, "Okay, I'll add that to the list." Well, it took a little while, but Janice stepped up to the plate and created a whole new website for us, which we just launched this week. It is continuing to evolve, it will be tweaked but there's some really important things about it. It's not broken, and we can put up-to-date announcements on it. They're on there every week now. We can put our newsletter on it, our board minutes. You can go to our website and find out what you need to know. The calendar is updated, so it's really an important resource. So Janice, I just wanted to give you this gift and a card as a token of our appreciation for all your hard work. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely check it out. It's a major upgrade from where we were at. So great job, Janice. Thank you. Each Sunday, our children collect food donations to provide food for those in need. This month is rice. We invite the children to sit up front for the Time of All Ages presentation before they go to their educational classes.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Rachel White, and I'm the Director of Religious Education here at UUCF. And this morning, since we are examining how we do worship here in our congregation, I'm going to be talking about Time for All Ages. Every week, we see the children collect food donations and come up here and sit down, whether it's for a story or a skit or a special presentation. We always come up here for a special Time for All Ages. And I'm going to talk to the children a little bit and ask them some questions about why they think we do this. Why do you think we come up here every Sunday morning for a Time for All Ages? Does anybody have something they might think is the answer? Josie. Say that one more time, Josie.
Because we are UUCF.
Because we are UUCF, and it is just a fact of life here at UUCF that the children come up here. I love you, Josie. Why? What is the purpose of us coming up here? What's the point of it? What do we do when we come up here? Any answers? Yes. No? No? Does anybody? What do we do when we come up here? What is it that we do? Josie, again, I can always count on you.
Listen to stories.
We listen to stories. Oh, Colin?
We learn.
We learn. Listen to stories and we learn together. And why do you think it's not called just children's story time or let's learn up in front of the congregation? Why do we think it's called Time for All Ages? Why do we think it's called that?
Because all ages have to learn a new lesson every day.
Because all ages have to learn a new lesson every day. That is so correct. And you know what's really special about doing this particular Time for All Ages up here with all of us together is we all as a community get to learn a new lesson together. And do you think these lessons are just for the kids when we come up here?
No.
Are they just for the kids up here?
No.
Raise your hand out here if whenever I'm up here or Jason or I or anybody else is up here and we do a Time for All Ages, if it gives you something, if it teaches you something. Exactly. The time that the children are up here isn't just for us, though it does give them a special connection to the worship of our community. It's for everybody. It's a time for all of us as a community, as a congregation, to learn together. And for the children, it doesn't just stop here. We go to our classes and they have their own version of joys and sorrows, and they have their own versions of lessons and religious spirituality that they explore together. And so it all starts here together as a community, and then we go to our own lessons and continue that, as we will do today.
Go with wisdom, go with wonder.
And of course, No service would be complete without a moment to share the joys and sorrows that are happening in our lives, the things that are maybe too great, too big, too difficult or challenging, or maybe too joyous that to keep to ourselves, that we actually want to share that with other people and have them hold that with us as well. So if you do have a brief personal joy or sorrow you'd like to share, and I see one coming down the aisle in just a minute here, so that's going to be fun. But I invite you to come forward at this time. But we'll start with you, Barbara.
I think we're both so happy because it's my sister's birthday.
Got these kids dropped off and the parents left. Oh, there's one. There's my daughter-in-law. My son is somewhere in the building. These are my two twin grandchildren. Malcolm is here and Kaylee is in the back. And it's just been a real joy to experience them. They're still in their car seats, so can't hold them up and show them, but you can see them after the service.
How do you follow that? Okay, so Jim, if you could light a candle for Jillian's friend, Genevieve Payton, who this Shabbat just became a bat mitzvah, and we were lucky enough to spend 2 days with her family, an enormous amount of work, and just watching her become fully a member of her faith community was really thrilling. So,
yesterday, Gwen and I attended a reveal party given by our granddaughter and her husband to reveal the sex of the baby they're expecting. It's going to be a little girl in November. Her name is going to be Kensington Bree Stanton. So we will be great grandparents.
Hi, I'm Glad Sharp. And I am real excited because my middle girl and her husband, who live in Reno, Nevada, they flew to LAX and she called me and she says, "We're on our way to Hawaii." This has been their dream. They've been married now 40 years, their 40th anniversary. He gave her an anniversary ring besides, and I'm just really pleased.
Hi, I'm sorry, because I'm coming up with something not good. So, my 42-year-old brother went into the hospital on Monday with heart failure. And he's doing a little bit better each day, but still, it's been really intense. I've been into San Francisco and back. I'm leaving again tomorrow, and juggling Rowan and just back and forth. So just some hold space for him, that each day he gets better, and we'll just see what happens as we go. Thank you.
A member of our church, Katrina Enriquez, she's starting radiation for her thyroid that she had removed, and I believe that starts this week. She's not here today, but I know she's struggling a bit with it, and we just want to give her all of our support, so if we could light a candle for her, that'd be wonderful.
And if you'll light one candle for me, I'm very happy to announce that as I continue my journey with you, I will be starting, for better or worse, a doctoral program in September. So it's about probably 3 years, and I won't make you call me Reverend Doctor, but it'll be nice to know that I got that possibility. But I am really excited. It's with Claremont School of Theology, and I think it's a wonderful way to open up what we do here and have a cyclical relationship between what I'm learning and what I can bring to the congregation and so on. So I'm really looking forward to beginning that.
Well, let's find our way into a time of prayer, meditation, reflection.
this morning as we explore what it is that we do in this space. I invite you to reach inside yourself and touch that special part of your heart where love blooms and grows. Know that it is love that brought you here today. Love that keeps you alive. Know that you are not alone, that the love which blooms inside you is shared by the loved ones who surround you, who, like you, have known not only loss, not only fear, but also the joy of saying yes to the beauty of life. Know that the love which blooms inside you is stronger than fear. For people who love find strength they didn't know they had. Know that the love inside you is stronger than illness. For people who love hang in when the physical health is gone. And know that love is indeed stronger than death. For people who love are like stones tossed into a pool. The circles of love radiate out and echo back long after the stone has come to rest on the bottom. So remember your love as a source of strength. Remember who you are. Lovers tossed by these difficult times. I invite you into a moment of silence. Life astounds us. The miracle of twins in our midst. The joys that we share with one another. The gratitude we hold. Also the shadows that come into our lives. Cancer treatment. Loss. Worries about family members and loved ones. Worries about the world and what we see. Concerns about what is happening at our borders. Anxieties about where the shared collective conscience has gone. And yet, when we come together on a Sunday morning, we lift up what is of greatest importance to us. We hold one another in all that we may be experiencing, and we know that while the waters are rough sometimes, We are never alone in the boat. Let us hold steady in that knowledge that we are together, that we are not alone, and whatever we may face in life, we do so knowing there are others just within reach. What do you get when you cross a Unitarian with a Jehovah's Witness? Someone who shows up on your front doorstep but has no idea why they're there. That goes to say that what might be more obvious in another religious setting can be less obvious for us, including the practices of our own worship services. Our liturgy, from the call to worship to the prayer to hymn singing, still loosely resembles the Protestant liturgy from which we come. And yet, since those Puritan days, our worship has certainly evolved, and we've made changes accordingly, as seen in the lighting of our chalice each Sunday morning. This isn't a 100-year-old practice, but one that came out of World War II, when the flaming chalice was used as a symbol of safety for people who were fleeing from the Nazis with the help of the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. And so, at that time, just the Unitarian Service Committee. And so UU's added the lighting of the chalice to our worship services so that we would never forget the actionable hope that we can meet human atrocities with. And even this morning, as our chalice was lit, I found myself thinking about the conditions at our border. We've seen so much on the news this week. Immigrants packed into unfit camps, children separated from parents, while others currently wait in fear after hearing the latest threats against them. And I know there are people in this congregation who certainly have members of their family that they are concerned about right now. So the chalice flame, this is part of our worship,
It's to remind ourselves of our call to justice. That's why we light that and leave that lit. And of course, the other big piece we know about worship is that it's traditionally associated with the concept of God. And thus the question I often get from people, usually outside of our community, is if everyone here doesn't believe in God, and those who are here don't believe necessarily in the same idea of God, then what are we worshiping? So to answer this, you know, we have to look back at the etymology of the word worship. And in Old English, it was known as worth-ship. And that meant ascribing worth to something. So what we do when we gather in worship is we are ascribing worth to that which is of greatest importance to us. And ideally approaching this time with a deep sense of reverence. But then that brings up the question of what does reverence look like in today's world, in 2019? I was thinking about that. I was thinking about that back when I was in my preteens, my mother became the first woman board president for the liberal Christian church that we attended. And during her tenure, there were three issues that kept coming up. And you can call her this afternoon and she'd tell you these three things. She remembers well. Sherlyn, you'll remember well too what came up during your time here. Three things. One, are gays welcome in the church? Two, should the church move to a new building? And three, should clapping, applause, be allowed during worship services? So years later, decades later, when I started going to a UU church as an adult, on the other side of the country, a good 20 years since Mom had wrestled with these problems, this UU congregation was facing three issues. How do we let gays know they're welcome in the church? Should the church move to a new building? And should clapping be allowed during worship services? And here we are, still wrestling with whether we move to a new building and asking to clap or not to clap with the seriousness of Hamlet. Who would have thought that the gays in the church question would be the easiest one to answer? So let's talk about applause. When Peter Morales, former president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, was asked why some churches were able to grow rapidly, I remember him saying this so vividly, he said the extensive studies that the UUA had done hadn't been very illuminating. In the end, he had gone and visited all these what they called breakthrough congregations, and he figured out what set them apart. They all shared a palpable sense of joy, fun, and laughter. In short, these breakout churches were noisy. When we greet each other in the moment of greeting at the beginning of the service, when we laugh readily during Time for All Ages, when we sing loudly, we are tapping into that place where our joy in being together has to express itself in sound. It's easy, I think, to be quiet when it's just about your individual needs. It's harder to contain those sounds when it's about all of us. But that doesn't mean we don't and shouldn't have moments of quiet. When there's silence here, then we know we've earned the silence. That we've had places to express our joy, but we are also finding space to express our reverence. An awed acknowledgement of what is holy, however we define that. The silence is sweeter when contrasted with the sounds of connection that have come before. So where does clapping fall into all of this? Well, first of all, I think we have to consider clapping as having its place in church, much like the sounds of laughter or joyous singing. Sometimes people want to express their appreciation, their joy, and clapping might be the way to do that. And as we try to draw the circle wider and be more inclusive of people who fall outside traditional white upper middle class demographics, we know that clapping is a big part of some cultures and faith traditions we might be welcoming in. So I don't want to try and manage something like clapping too much. You know, in the church of my childhood, they tried to stop clapping during the services. And my mother is board president, board passed a resolution, no more clapping. And we went along fine for a few weeks. And then we had a guest singer who sang a beautifully heartfelt song, exactly the sort of thing that many wanted greeted with reverent silence. But someone began clapping. Who's clapping? I thought, having heard my mother talk about this ad nauseum at home. I looked around. It was my own father. Now, you have to understand, my father had a very difficult relationship with religion and had not attended church all those years that I was a kid. So this was one of his first times coming back to a church. And he was so moved, he had to show his appreciation. Meanwhile, my mother and I are staring daggers at the poor guy. So at the UU church I first attended, a rule was established right after I got there. No clapping while the chalice is lit. That means you could get your clapping in before or after, but never during the central part of the service. Unfortunately, this can create a situation where some people designate themselves as the applause police. Not pretty. So lots of reasons not to try too hard to control applause, but, and this is the big but, the tricky part is that sometimes the clapping is less about an authentic response and more about routine. Well, we clap for that musician, so I guess we better clap for everybody and everything. And that is where we might start moving from worship, ascribing worth to that which is of greatest importance to us in our lives, to simply attending a performance. And we don't want that. So I invite you to continue responding authentically to our worship, but also paying attention to what feels necessary and authentic in response and what doesn't. Our speakers and musicians don't expect applause. If you feel moved to applaud as an honest response to a moment, there is a place for that. But again, I think it's about making a place of worship for us all, a place of reverence. And sometimes that might be noisy, and sometimes that might be quiet. And this idea of reverence brings me to the idea of prayers in the service. Need I say that UUs tend to have a complicated relationship with prayer? I'm reminded of the old joke of the minister presiding over a funeral service. He begins by saying, "We are gathered here because your prayers didn't work." And we know that prayers in lieu of action, that gets old, right? We've all heard the expression thoughts and prayers in response to yet another shooting or violent event. But it certainly doesn't mean we have to dismiss the idea of prayer. Prayer in the context of a UU service is directly related to that idea of worship. It's a place to name the things that are most important to us, that cause us concern, or fill us with gratitude, joy. Prayer as a UU doesn't have to be directed to any being. It can simply be a way of slowing down to articulate, even just for ourselves, what is of greatest value. What about those silent meditations in our service? Well, the truth is that they're not really long enough to really be of great use other than appreciating that feel of energy that flows from one another in that silent moment. Meditation is primarily meant to inspire you into a practice of getting away from the chatter of your own mind and finding a place of peace intentionally that is healing to your spirit. So we're not really going to be able to do that in 1 minute or 2 minutes or 5 minutes or even 10 minutes of meditation in this room. That meditation moment in the service is designed to whet your appetite, encourage you to explore that relationship with silence, with quiet on your own time. What else do we do on Sunday morning? Well, we sing, of course. And there's another joke. Lots of UU jokes about our practices. Why can't Unitarians sing very well? You know the answer to that?
They're always reading ahead to see if they agree with the words or not. Well, I don't know that we can't sing very well, but it's a good joke. And words are important. But I'll suggest that they are less important than the act of singing itself. You know, I was thinking about this. There used to be lots of opportunities in our world to sing together. Families sang together in homes, gathered around the piano. Communities gathered in parks and amphitheaters and churches and schools for sing-alongs. Singing used to be a way of strengthening family bonds and community relationships. Nowadays, we have a lot of music coming through technology, but rare is that opportunity to sing together. So when we sing together on Sunday morning, we start to reclaim through music that age-old bonding practice that is all but lost in today's world. And then there's the offering, of course. What can I say about that? As the old saying goes, this church welcomes all denominations, but we prefer tens and twenties. But all joking aside, the UU offering, it's a bold act. It's an acknowledgement that the church belongs to the people. Still a radical notion in many other faith traditions. You don't put money in the basket because some higher authority tells you to. You put it in there because the church belongs to you. It's funded by you. It's sustained by you. Still a radical idea. And now to the sermon. What does a sermon mean for a Unitarian Universalist? A wise man was once asked, "What is the meaning of life?" He replied, "Life itself has no meaning. Life is an opportunity to create meaning." And that essentially is what the sermon is, an opportunity to articulate, albeit imperfectly, ways in which life can be meaningful. It means a sermon is sometimes prophetic. It speaks to what we need to do, such as calling out the current administration as it threatens more ICE raids on immigrants. It's a time we might acknowledge the moral compass that demands we are responsive to injustice. And the sermon is sometimes poetic. It's a time to reflect on the astounding miracle of life we see in someone else's eyes, the gratitude we feel when we are in harmony with the bounteous earth itself, when we see a grandmother holding one of her twin babies. The sermon is sometimes pastoral. It recognizes that our lives are full of loss and woe, challenge and struggle. It not only makes room for the pain that is brought into this space, but it actually gives a voice to it. And besides being prophetic, poetic, and pastoral, I believe a good sermon does something else. It reminds us that we will all someday die. Every good sermon is tinged with the reality that life on this earth is not forever. To the old question of what is a UU, the answer is said to be someone who believes in life before death. And so a sermon reminds us that whatever happens after we die, it appears we get one shot at this lifetime. So why not make it count? And that overall is what this 1 hour of worship is designed to train us to do. The pattern of music and spoken word has a long history of attempting to remind us that life is worth living, that it's up to us to make it count. It's a reminder not only that we're not alone, but that we are actually accountable to other people, and it's a beautiful thing. And as perplexing as it is to other faith traditions who don't understand us, it's a beautiful thing that we don't all share the same idea of God at the center of our worship services. But when we UUs, back in the mid-20th century, began to move away from God-centered worship, we did leave a hole there. And we have had to fill it with something. Since then, we've never named collectively what that something is. We've left that up to individuals to figure it out. But I'll tell you what it can't be if our worship is going to be nourishing and sustainable moving into the future. The whole can't be filled by the human ego. It can't be my ego or your ego or anyone's ego at the center of our worship. Worship has to gesture towards something bigger than our individual egos. And that gets back to those other issues I mentioned that were themes in other churches I've been part of. Moving to bigger buildings, letting certain groups of people know they are welcome. Because the thing about worship, when we're doing it right, is that it draws the circle of inclusion wider, creating a place for people to gather where there's room for what they bring and what they give. And it means that there are parts of the service that might not speak to any one of us individually, but we stay present in knowing they are of value to someone else. But worship in our communities is about togetherness, about taking this age-old liturgy and opening it for all who are present today. And in so doing, in a world filled with more and more alienation and isolation, we lean further into what it means to really be people of conscience, of loving hearts, of accountability. In the end, then, I would say worship is community. Worship is love acted out.
You're a tough act to follow, kid. Our offering is a vital way we show our gratitude for community. By giving to UUCF, we know that this community of caring will continue to do its good work in the world, and we thank you for your generosity.
Closing hymn, we will be singing hymn number 1017, Building a New Way. Please rise in mind, body, or spirit and join us in singing.